Good morning, everyone. We're a packed room here, and we're going to get maybe more chairs?
Couldn't find them.
Okay. Anyway, welcome to the second session sponsored by the Chiropractic Healthcare Section. And I'm Bill Meeker. I'm the president of Palmer College of Chiropractic's West Campus in San Jose. Very happy to see as many people I know here. And it's a real pleasure for me to introduce our panel of speakers today. I'll do them one at a time, actually. No, I think I'll do them all at once here because it'll save some time later. We have Paul Dougherty. Paul is a faculty member at New York Chiropractic College. I'm doing this from memory here. So, Paul, correct me if I'm wrong. He's also appointed at the VA in, Rochester. Condegra. And he's going to be talking about it. Randomized trial they're working on there. Mike Kainlines, professor at Palmer College West. I should say Mike is leaving us, unfortunately. I hate to say it, but he's moving on to run the chiropractic program for the Royal Melbourne Institute of Technology in Malaysia. He'll be head of the program there. So, Mike, congratulations and good luck to you. And then Mitch Haas, professor at Western States Chiropractic College. And when I came to my first APTA meeting in 1985, we had a couple of paper sessions, I think. And I got to tell you that the quality and complexity, depth, and everything of the research that's being presented at this meeting has grown by leaps and bounds over the years. And this is a great example of really cutting-edge research in any field that we can be very proud of it. So let me introduce to Dr. Dougherty. His title is Chiropractic Management of Chronic Lower Back Pain in Older Adults, a Randomized Clinical Trial. Paul.
Thank you, Bill. My disclosure is that this grant is funded as what's called a VA merit review. It's the VA's internal funding of randomized of clinical research and HSR&D. And so, in this case, safe and effective management of back pain is important in older adults. If you go to do a literature review on randomized controlled trials for back pain in older adults, it doesn't take very long. There's not a lot of data on randomized controlled trials. And this is particularly germane in the veteran population, with one study stating that back pain was in excess of 40% in older adults. And so one of the things that was a challenge to us as we went to design a study was how to design a randomized controlled trial in older adults. And I'll talk to you a little bit about how this has kind of evolved, but we really wanted to do a sham trial because one of the criticisms that I got as I was doing presentations in hostile audiences for the last 15 years is that all of what you guys do is it's a sham. That it really is. And so, you know what? I finally have relented and said, okay, maybe it is. And said, let's do a study and let's perform a ritual. And so I'm really fascinated with the idea of that what we do has a ritualistic component to it. And this was Kapchuk's paper in Annals in 2002, and I won't read this to you because you all can read, and this study actually was very interesting. But there's this idea that in unconventional healing, the unique drama is this, that it may enhance the placebo effect. And so what we did as we went to design this trial was that we wanted to create a reproducible sham. Just real quick, that paper, always when I do this lecture in multidisciplinary audiences, there was an article in orthopedic related research on comparing surgery to shamanism. And so it's not just us that gets accused of this ritual. But it is important, I think, in research that we start to look at that and to tease out, is the ritual part of healing? And so in this case, I think I went backwards there, didn't I? Oh, here it is. This was clinical orthopedic and related research. You can just take the reference down. It's actually kind of a neat article. But basically, I put this in just to say, it's not just us that gets accused of the ritual. Other area of research that we're doing right now is actually looking at patient-centered versus doctor-centered care, and does that influence outcomes in back pain? And so I think that this is an important area. And so obviously with the biopsychosocial model of pain, we need to look at the different aspects of what is involved. And Gary, I put this in just for you because you love it so much. And so basically the biopsychosocial model of pain says that pain is a complex interaction, and that we have to look at what affects the psychosocial components of what we do with pain. And so all of this, just so that you understand, is kind of our background as to why we wanted to do a sham controlled trial that built into it this ritual of having a doctor-patient interaction that was reproducible. And so, again, it's important to see that pain is experienced uniquely. And so that all of that background is just to say that it was the reason that we chose in a manipulation trial to try and make an intervention that both interventions had this kind of reproducible, same time in the room, same sort of ritual. I'll tell you at the end, if I had it to do again, I would have done some other sort of intervention, just because our placebo for this trial is detuned ultrasound. And as we've started to treat the patients with it, what we found is just that, just putting blue gel on someone's back and rubbing their back, it is an intervention. And so I think that if I had this to do again, I think that we would do it differently. But we're funded now, and so, you know, we're going to do this, and we're going to hang in there and finish. And so, let me go back. We wanted to do routine chiropractic management. In our case, we defined routine chiropractic management as high velocity, low amplitude manipulation, mobilization, and flexion distraction. And we left it open as a little bit of a black box in this case, because we wanted to allow for generalizability. This is the trouble when you design these trials, is you have to have that balance between generalizability and specific treatment. And so in our case, we did choose to do those. We allowed those three managements in it, and we're keeping track of which one is done, but we did allow that as part of it.
No,
lumbar spine only. Lumbar spine only. Yep. And one of the other big things that we did was we wanted to collect prospective data on adverse events. And so our trials, both this one and the next one that I'll present, are held to the same level as drug trials because we're doing them in this setting. And so adverse events, and this is for Dana because he'll appreciate this, the adverse events is anything that happens. So if a patient sprains his ankle, patient trips and falls, whacks their head on a limb mowing the lawn, we have to report all that. We've had 5 serious adverse events at our site to date, not in this trial, but in our other trial that I'll present next. And so it is important that we start to get this data in the literature, particularly in older adults. We right now are working on a manuscript talking about Coumadin and high velocity, low amplitude manipulation that for this study, we excluded. We're currently excluding Coumadin, but we're making a case that we want to include Coumadin patients in this case for various reasons, but one is because we had such a strict inclusion criteria that it's really affected our ability to recruit patients who are over 65 who are not anticoagulated in the VA system. And so it's made it a bit of a challenge for us. And so we have a data and safety monitoring board that has a geriatrician, a geriatric neurologist, a psychologist, and a biostatistician. And so our outcome measures were ODI. If I had it to do again, see, this is the recurrent theme through this talk, if I had it to do again. If I had it to do again, for those of you who are considering designing trials for older adults, if I had it to do again, I'd use Roland Morris or I would use Bournemouth. Roland Morris or Oswestry, Just kind of, those of you who use it know, it's a lot of reading for older adults. It's five choices. It's kind of overwhelming at times. And so if I had this to do again, we'd used Roland Morris. SF-36, in our next trial, we're going to use SF-12. And VAS, we actually are counting pills. We're doing brown bag. But we're only doing brown bag for analgesics. So, you know, as Andy said, in the VA, we can have patients who have 30 medications. And so we chose not to count all those pills. But we're counting just analgesics. And I'll talk a little bit about that later. But as we've seen this, one of the things in older adults is even PRN medications, if their doctor told them to take something twice a day, older adults don't really vary from that a whole lot, even if they feel better. And so that's going to be an interesting one. We also are doing timed up and go because it's a reliable and valid measure of proprioception. And so in this case, not only are we doing timed up and go, but we're timing each leg of the timed up and go. And so for those of you who don't know, timed up and go is you sit in a chair. We have a loud sound that goes off that tells the patient to get up. They then walk 9 millimeters. They walk out. Andy, help me out here. They walk 9 meters. So they go out. Turn. We have a orange cone that they. We have a little trail. Follow the yellow brick road, and we measure each leg of this to see how long it takes them to get up and get to the first, and then around. And so we, you know, for years we've been told that spinal manipulation has a positive effect on proprioception. Yet we still, to date, have no great data for that. And so we really hope to have data on this because we want to look at if it does help. Then there's the possibility we can look at fall prevention in the future in older adults. And so the way that we do this is the patients call, they're phone screened. In our case, in the VA, it becomes a challenge. And this is a multi-site study. I want to acknowledge that Andy is our Buffalo PI. And it's very interesting in the VA to do research because every facility has their own IRB. And there are unique differences from site to site in doing research in the VA. So the way that he can recruit patients is actually different than the way that we can recruit patients. And so we're trying to keep track of all that. And we just got approved to pay the patients, which we didn't have in the beginning. And so all these things play a factor. And so in our case, the patient gets phone screened. If they meet the phone screening, then they come for a physical screening. At the physical screening, they undergo their informed consent prior to undergoing the physical screening. And then the baseline measures, baseline physical exam, timed up and go, and we count their pills. And then they get randomized. Into either the chiropractic management or the detuned ultrasound. It's 2 times a week for 4 weeks. Actually, I take that back. We did change that. We originally wrote the protocol as 2 times a week for 4 weeks, but we couldn't do that because of compliance. It was very difficult to get the patient to come, and so we changed it to 8 visits over 35 days. In order to allow for that. We chose 2 times a week because Mitch Haas is the greatest researcher in the world, and he gave us, he is the greatest. But dosage data was very difficult. And from Dr. Haas's data, we kind of said, well, it falls somewhere in the middle that at 3 months, it didn't seem to matter how many treatments. And so we chose 2 treatments a week as kind of a pragmatic, this seems to be reasonable. But that was kind of how we did that. We then immediately post-intervention. We also are using the Borkovec and Now questionnaire, which basically is a sham validation. Basically, you ask them, do you think you got the real thing or do you think you got shammed? We actually ask that at the end of the first treatment and at the end of the intervention phase. And so we really want to see... if they believe that they got the real thing or not. And that's part of our ritual, is that we want to be sure if the ritual is valid or not. And so that's why we did that. And then the timed up and go again. And then we discharge them. We've called them once a month for adverse event data. And then we bring them back in at 3 months and do this again. We do the VAS ODI brown bag and the timed up and go again. Right now, we have, actually these numbers are not accurate to bring us actual data. Andy, you now have 3 enrolled, correct?
Yes.
They just got their third one enrolled. And so you can see that we have a long way to go. But one of our, we actually are going to IRB at this point. We actually want to look at anticoagulation. As you know, there were two studies that came out in the last 2 years, case studies looking at spinal epidural hematomas post-manipulation in anticoagulated patients. But the incidence is so low, and we have data both from Monroe Community Hospital and from the VA that we are set to publish that showed that manipulation could be safe in an anticoagulated population, and so we're going to make the case that this is a safe procedure, and hopefully that's going to help us in our recruitment efforts. And so in this case, again, we chose the study design because really where I want to go in the future of my research is to look at the nonspecific therapeutic effects of the doctor-patient interaction. What we can't deny as a profession is that we have, if you have 50 chiropractors, do you get 50 different treatments, yet most of it is effective. And so it's got to be something more than or enhanced by some non-specific therapeutic effects. And so that's our future and where we want to go with this. And so I think that's it for there. And I think what we're going to do... Yeah. Do we have 3 minutes?
Yeah, three minutes. Yeah.
Okay. Any questions, Dana?
Just a quick one. Talk briefly about how you're recruiting your participant to pay them. What are you paying them?
It's $200 total. It's $10 a visit. No, that's not right, is it, Andy? Yeah, $20 a visit. I'm sorry. And so baseline visit, and then the follow up, and so We did go back. That was not in our original proposal, but we had some extra money when we got the money and decided that it was very difficult because our IRB, we originally wrote this as a deception trial, but we couldn't get a deception trial through IRB. And so we have to tell them, you have a 50-50 chance of getting shammed. Which is why we use chiro-naive patients, too. I should have told that we used, and so you can imagine recruiting older adults who are not anticoagulated, who are chiropractic naive. There's four, and I think we have all of them. But, yeah, so it's been a challenge.
And your IRB is comfortable with the amount of money? They don't feel coercive?
No. And it really isn't, Dana, when you consider gas. And both of our facilities, patients drive a fair distance to get, because we're in rural, he's in rural Buffalo area, and I'm in the rural Rochester area, yeah.
Chronic low back pain?
Yeah, 3 months.
That was my question. So your definition of chronic pain was 3 months or more?
Yeah, and it ain't hard to find chronic back pain in the VA. Yeah. Yeah, so we used 3 months.
Is detuned ultrasound set below the 0.5 or turned off?
Actually, what happens is the machine turns on, it's at zero. But it makes noise. That's part of the ritual, is that it makes noise. You hear it hum. You have the blue gel. There's a script that we... And one of the other things that we did is the person who asks them how they're doing since their last visit is blinded as to which intervention they've undergone. So we actually have, in this case, it's Jonathan at my facility, Steve Passmore at Andy's facility, who come in prior to us coming into the room and ask the patient about adverse events and ask them how they're doing. So we have a blinded person who's collecting the daily outcome measures, and the coordinator who's collecting the data is blinded. So Jonathan does the timed up and go, at every study, Steve does it, and both Steve and Jonathan are blinded as to the intervention.
But there's actually no ultrasound current going through that.
No.
Zero.
No. If I had it to do again, there would be.
No. Let me talk to you afterwards about that. And one comment: I was taught for one of my many bachelor's degrees, we had to take classes with the medical school students, so the medical professors taught us, and taught the med students primarily. And what they said is every doctor of any kind has a clinical armamentarium. They called it their black bat, field timers carried around. And he was quick to point out that placebo is a very legitimate tool that belongs in that bag of every practitioner.
Yeah, there was just
only tool.
Yeah, there was just a paper published that reported was what, 50% of physicians report that they at some point along the way use a placebo in their practice.
They're just giving their patients something because patients want it.
Right. And so I really think that as opposed to hanging my head about the fact that manipulation may be, that it may be part of a ritual, I'll say I don't apologize for it at all. I think that it's something that we absolutely can't deny and should study to see where it goes. One more.
Paul, is the therapist doing the detuned diathermy ultrasound given a script to tell the patient how well this is helping them?
Andy and I both do it. We ask them throughout, is this getting too warm? Are you uncomfortable with it? Are you doing okay? If it gets too warm, you just need to tell me to turn it down. And so, but I'll tell you, honestly, at this stage, if I had it to do again, we'd turn the machine on and call it an intervention. It's tough. It's tough. Yeah. It's the whole deception. If we could have done it as a deception trial and told them it was real, I think it would have been different. But in the back of their mind, it's very difficult. That's why we're doing Borkovecan now, because we want to check the reliability of what we're doing. And we may find that everyone who got shammed realized they got shammed. And so then we go back to the